Well, it's nice to be here. We always enjoy coming back to Redlands and seeing everyone. And nice group, nice place to be. Hope we can make the most of it today, be useful to everyone. Well, the Bible's filled with lessons. Many times we just seem to stumble on things. We read a passage and zap, you know, a bell goes off and says, wow, just think of that. What an amazing thing that we've had revealed to us today, this nugget of truth. But how often does God tell us directly, read the story and get the point? He doesn't direct things to us, it seems, in so many words. We have to glean that and understand what he's saying and so forth. Well, there's one story, and there are many others as well, but one particular story in the Bible that I think is a clear example of something that's more specific than stumbling across a new scripture, a new understanding of something that we've been reading about. It's a story most people are somewhat familiar with, and it's in Genesis 19, 26 about Lot's wife, and we'll get into that in a bit. Where in part it says, she looked back and became a pillar of salt. Well, let's first of all, though, go to 1 Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11. Don't murmur as some men murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. All these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition on whom the ends of the earth have come. Well, that's us, those who are here when the ends of the earth are, in essence, the end of man's self-governance, if you will, are going to come to an end. And all these Old Testament stories and notations and so forth are examples that are written for our admonition. The word examples is quite clear, you know, things that happen to others that may have a direct comparison, a direct implication in our life and so forth with situations that we're involved with, good or bad. And the word admonition is kind of a mild rebuke, or it also says a warning or a caution against something or someone or some way of looking at things. But they were written for us, not against us, but for us, against whom the ends of the ages have come. So I want to go over that story about Lot's wife and dig below the surface a little bit in order to more thoroughly use it as one of those examples in our life, in our time. So you may be thinking, what's so significant about that incident? It might appear trifling. God said, don't look back, and she did, and God punished her. So big deal. What's that got to do with me? That was a long time ago. What she did may seem a little consequence, a little trifling thing in first reading it. But when you get into it a little bit, I think it reveals a great deal about character and the influences that she was dealing with in her life. Lot's wife directly disobeyed that clear command that God had given, and so she paid a penalty for that. Well, let's go to 1 Samuel 15. 1 Samuel channel 15. Chapter and verse 22. Then Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he's also rejected you from being king. He's talking to Saul. But look at how that application fits the situation with Lot's wife. And look at how it would fit our lives as well. He's pointing out, of course, that to obey is better than sacrifice. He wants us to obey his word. He doesn't want us to go out and kill a bull and offer that. He wants us to obey. And also points out that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, which we know certainly would be a terrible thing. So she rebelled. And the lesson is that we should do what God says, not rebel. Do as he says. Well, let's look a little bit at the background for Lot's wife. You know, we'll fill in the high points a little bit leading up to the story that I made reference to about his wife and her looking back, so that the actual point of the sermon, when we get to that point, I hope would make more sense because of considering where it's coming from. The whole thing starts with Abram in Genesis. We'll just skip here and there in Genesis as we go through, but go to Genesis 12, first of all. In Genesis 12 and verse 1, "Now the Lord had said to Abram," and I'm skipping into 4, "so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran." Now we're not talking so much about Abram here, we're talking about Lot, but I wanted to tie it in so we see where things are coming from. Then in verse 10, we read, "Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land." Well, Lot went with him. His nephew went with him. And they were trying to escape that famine by going to Egypt, where they still had a lot of food to eat. Now in 13, in verse 1, "Then Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot went with him to the south," or it really is by the way of the south. In verse 2 says, "Abram was very rich in livestock and silver and gold." And verse 5 says, "Lot also, who went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents." So they were both very rich. Now we don't think so much about Lot being rich, but Abram was super rich and Lot was just plain rich, if you can look at it as a comparative. And the problem that showed up was that there's not enough grazing land for their large herds. In verse 7 then, "And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock, and the Canaanites and Perizzites that dwelt in the land." So they had a little tiff. In verse 8, "So Abram said, please, let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me if you take the right, or you take the left, and I will go to the right. If you go to the right, I will go to the left." So they resolved the strife that was between the herdsmen in particular, not Lot and Abram so much, because of all the need for grazing the herds. And they found a way to separate amicably and go about doing what they're doing, raising more. In verse 12, "Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent even as far as Sodom." And then 13, "But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord." So they found a way to go find grazing land, and here it shows that Lot went as far as Sodom, and it also points out the problem. Sodom had evil men living there. So that leads us in a little bit to where we're going. We're going to then skip over 15 to 18 chapters and go to Genesis 19. And we come to the situation that Lot was involved in while he was in Sodom. And so let's read this passage. We'll go through 1 through 11 until we get to the particular incident we're talking of here. In 19 and verse 1, "Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, hear now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, and then you may rise early and go on your way. And they said, no, but we'll spend the night in the open, in the square. But he insisted strongly. So they did turn into him and entered his house, and then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate." So this deals with Lot being out there in the gate, receiving strangers that come along and trying to befriend them and take care of them. It's kind of a typical situation that's reflected here, too, that somebody sits out in the gate. It's not just, you know, a nobody, if you will. Generally, it's somebody that has some respect, age, experience, financial well-being, etc., that are chosen to be the leaders or head of the city and that sort of thing, and that's what we find him doing out in the gate. Typical kind of situation we read of several times in the Bible. Well, Let's go on here with that story a little bit. What happens is, in the course of the evening, the men of the city, the evil men of the city, want to come and take the angels and do with them as they would evilly do to other men, because they're new in town. And the angels actually, Lot goes out to try to say, here, take my daughters instead. Don't do that to these strangers, these men. And they say, no, we're going to do it our way. And so Lot's out trying to persuade them, go away. And the angels themselves have to pull him back in the house. And then they confuse the gang of evildoers. In verse 11 it says, they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they became weary trying to find the door. So they couldn't even find the door anymore when the angels blocked their mind in some fashion. Now, here's the one section we want to read through and comment a little bit as we go along. So in verse 12, the men said to Lot, have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, and whomsoever you have in the city? Take them out of this place. So they're saying, do you have any relatives here? Now, we later read who they are, but in this case, it's just kind of wide open. Do you have some relatives here? We want to take care of them. There was some conjecture there that maybe there were other married daughters besides the two we read of in the rest of this passage, but that's probably not likely, and I'll cover that in a little bit. In 13, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them had grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Clearly, they're there to destroy the whole city because of its wickedness. And Lot, he was going to take care of. So Lot went out and spoke to the sons-in-law who had married his daughters and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. And don't we see this kind of thing? And perhaps some of our family relationships, we'll tell them about our belief in God's truth and so forth. And they say, oh, you got to be kidding. You keep the Sabbath, you don't eat pork. What's wrong with you? Same kind of thing. The sons-in-law, as it says here, said, oh, you must be off your rocker, Lot. So then in verse 14, so Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law. Whoops. In 15, when the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city. And verse 16, and while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside of the city. So they hurried. They were rushing Lot and his family to get out of the house and get out of the town. And it shows here that they literally dragged them outside. They took them, each one of those four people, by the hand and said, get out of here. We got to get out of here. And so you can see God was really being merciful to Lot. You know, you tend to think he wouldn't take the time and effort to really plead with somebody to get out. But here's even more than that. Drags them out of harm's way. Now, he rained down on the city, and you could read that in 24 and 5, and we may do that in a bit. So then in verse 17, so it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains lest you be destroyed. Obviously, they wanted him completely out of the vicinity of Sodom because he had told them through the angels he was going to rain down fire and brimstone and to destroy the entire city. So it's an important thing. As we see later, Jesus Christ referring to this situation, and in verse 26, as we go on, we'll see that in a bit. In verse 18, then Lot said to them, please, my lords, no. Now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy, which you have shown me, and by saving my life, I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. See now, this city near enough to flee, and it's a little one. Please let me escape there. And that's what the name means, a little city. My soul shall live. And he said to him, see, I have favored your concerning this thing also, in that I will not overthrow the city for which you have spoken. Hurry, verse 22, hurry, hurry up, escape there, for I can't do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, a little city. And so, again, they were still rushing Lot, and Lot didn't even want to go to the mountains. He wanted to just go a little ways to this little city. He was somehow, some way, afraid of going to the mountains. Okay, in verse 23. The sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. So right at sunrise is when this occurred. And then the Lord rained down brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. And then in verse 25, he overthrew those cities, all the plain, and the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. But, and here we are to the verse we were coming to, but his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. That seems like just a little thing that's inserted in there, doesn't it? She became a pillar of salt. It's always seemed kind of strange to consider that somebody was turned into a salt, of all things. And there's been all kinds of conjecture and commentaries and sermons even about the salt being, you know, a representation of preservative and all this sort of thing. And they talk about these kinds of things. They also talk about the possibility of this being some kind of a phenomenon, a natural thing. The formation of rocks, they thought, looks like a woman's outline. And the fire and brimstone perhaps raining down coated her with that material, you know, kind of sulfurous material or a bitumen, you know, petroleum. Of course, there's a lot of petroleum over there. Still fighting about that these days. Anyway, maybe that covered the Lot's wife, like a covering in strawberry dipped in chocolate, you know, that kind of thing. Or just as eloquent language, perhaps, is what some of them think. I personally feel that if God said it's salt, it's salt. Now, there are lots of kinds of chemicals that are salts, not just our table salt, sodium chloride. So, you know, it could have been some of the Dead Sea area other salts. But whatever, I think it shows that, in fact, God said that she was turned into a pillar of salt, that that's what it was. Now, let's jump ahead a bit and see the New Testament reference to this event for her and for Lot. Turn to Luke chapter 17. Okay, Luke 17 and verse 32, we read that one line, three words, remember Lot's wife. Jesus immortalized that statement, didn't he? These are his words. He said, remember Lot's wife. Why did he say that? And note where this came up in his dissertation to the disciples, which itself was answering a Pharisee's question about when the kingdom was to come. That had, we won't go read there, but just make note, it begins in verse 20, and then the disciples he's talking to in verse 22. But anyway, he explained the kinds of human activities that were to occur. Just ordinary things, eating, drinking, giving in marriage, buying, selling, planting, building. So it's ordinary time. What do we do if we go out here today? Ordinary things, buying, selling, planting, marrying, etc. Well, let's go to verse 29 here. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so, in verse 30, even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Goes on to explain a little more. In that day, he who is on the housetop and his goods are in the house, let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. So he's showing us here, I think, that ordinary things are happening. And should we expect anything different when we are given that instruction to flee from our local cities that have so much evil in them? And let God take us to someplace else that he wants to take care of us and protect us. So it's, you know, right there. He rains down fire from heaven. and it's over for that city. It's over. Pretty quick. Verse 32, yeah, we read, it's unexpected. Remember Lot's wife. Why? Why do we have to remember Lot's wife? Seems like we got more things to worry about today than what happened way back there. So, what does it mean? And what does it mean for us? Well, kind of as an overview, what was it like for her, and why would she look back? Because she did not merely turn her head and kind of glance back with her eyes, you know, just look over her shoulder and that's it, zap, just an instant. She dragged her feet, as we would say these days, dawdling, wasting time. The angels, remember, had to take her hand and pull her along, reluctant to go. I mean, we're reading some things into this, but get the tone of it, I think, if you look at it from this point of view. Really reluctant to go at all, let alone being anxious and eager and hurrying to do so. That impression, I think, is unmistakable. It was evident by this conduct that her heart really wasn't in it. She didn't believe what the angel had told her, the message from God. You've got to get out of here to save your life. She probably did not believe God would really destroy her possessions and her family. She just reluctantly went along because she loved Sodom and did not have faith in God. Well, I think this is a lesson for us. We read there in 1732 to remember Lot's wife. Let's also read verse 33. Oh, we did. I'm sorry. Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it. Well, see, that's what she was doing by just going along, seeking to save her life, if maybe these things were true or not. And she lost her life. And so it might be that when our time comes to flee, we should flee right now, not dawdle, not think about it for a while, you know, not do a Bible study or something at that point. Just get up and go because God said so. Don't dawdle, don't drag our heels, don't delay, don't put it off, don't question it, and don't look back. Don't do the Monday morning quarterback approach. You know, if I did this, so-and-so would happen, and why didn't he do so-and-so, and why didn't they pass to this guy, and, you know, all those different kinds of things that people do after the fact and trying to say, oh, I know better. If I were there, I would have done really great. There are many scriptures that talk about God providing a place to protect his people, a place of safety from the tribulations. And we're not going to turn there, but things you can read it if you feel like it. Isaiah 26, Matthew 24, Revelation 12. There's dozens of scriptures to read about. Even so, it'll probably be the most difficult decision of our lives to make ever. If it were a time where, you know, great disasters were happening right in our neighborhood, police were coming, armies were coming, people were confiscating your cars and your bank accounts, people were being beaten and taken to jail. You know, if all those terrible things were happening, you could easily say, well, I got to get out of here. It'd be easier. But there are scriptures that say that it will be a time where they say, peace and safety. You know, there's, I think 1 Thessalonians 5 refer you to that. Peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes. And that's what she was facing. Isn't it exactly what God was saying? It's not peace and safety, it's get out of Dodge, if you will. Let's go to Matthew 24. Has a lot to say about end time things, but we're going to read verse 15 through 18. When you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house, and let him who is in the field not go back and get his things. And I wanted to back up to verse 3. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, tell us about when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming, and at the end of the age. So here's where we're talking about that. He was asked about the events to happen at the end time, and it sounds like a replay of the situation in Lot's time. We see one of the things he answered. He said, just flee. Get out. You're not going to solve any problems staying here. You're risking your life. Get out of the city. Flee. Don't look back. Don't get your possessions. So she had a place of safety. This is talking about our time. We have a place of safety, we think. We don't know it exactly, how it works, where it is, when we do it, how we get there. She had something that's perfectly clear, a place of safety for her, and the angels were actually dragging her there. So when we hear about a place of safety in our time, what are we going to be ready to do? Are we going to learn a lesson from her or not? We don't even know when it is. We don't know how much time we'll have to move on it. We don't know how we'll get there. But she did, and she turned her back. So what was it like for her that she would do that? Why would she do such a thing and reject God's protection, personal instruction, what to do? Well, as we try to answer it, we shouldn't minimize this gut-wrenching decision that is required of us. Scripture implies that when this occurs, our families may be spread all over the country or even the world. Will we have faith and commitment to leave them, leave our homes, our cars, our pets, our other family members? So it's not just leaving possessions, but we, without our children or all of our family and friends that poo-poo the church, don't think this is right or whatever, are we going to trust God that he might protect them? We don't know what he'll do with them. They haven't shown any allegiance to him. We want that to happen, but we don't know it. And so the decision will not be easy when God is telling us here. Remember Lot's wife. It wasn't easy for her. So while we don't have any detailed, specific Bible statements of her reasons, we're able to summarize those kinds of things. Lot was a wealthy man. Had plenty of livestock and other cattle and a lot of people to do his work and so forth, earn money. And he's had so much he had to separate from super rich Abram and go to another location to graze. So in Sodom, Lot and his wife probably had a palatial house, at least for that time, fine furnishings, servants, fine clothes, sumptuous food, great entertainment. They had all those kind of things. He had plenty of money to buy it all. And she probably would have really had a hard time to leave that kind of lifestyle. And Lot had achieved prominence among the citizens of Sodom, even perhaps beyond his wealth. We read in that first verse of Genesis 19 that he's sitting in the gate, so he had recognition, he had authority of some sort, and influence around the town, and that's pretty much reserved for the elders and respected people around the communities and so forth. So she would have had to forsake the privileges of her lifestyle that went along with being a wife of a prominent citizen, a high-standing citizen. And then there was her family. You know, maybe not just the two daughters. The way it puts it, he went and talked to the sons-in-law, and you could say, well, he had two other daughters who were married, and these were sons-in-law, and so they're part of the family. They'd be concerned about them. But on the other hand, you can read that wording to be betrothed, or they were engaged to be married rather than already sons-in-law. They also would have had cousins and nephews and aunts and uncles and distant relatives and all these sorts of things that were entanglements. So we can't be exactly clear with that, but that's a possibility. It's not the crux of the whole issue at all, but it's part of it. So it would have meant certain death of her flesh and blood if there were other daughters, if there were sons-in-law. Even if they were the fiancés to be married, they would have a great deal of feel for them. And so it would be a certain death penalty that would be imposed because of raining down the fire and brimstone. So those kinds of emotions for her doomed family and the city and the possessions and the positions would have all gone through her thoughts if she didn't have really true total commitment to God. And so that makes for a tragic consideration and test of her faith. And there would have been much more than just physical possessions to consider. Or maybe she just loved the world more than she loved God. also a consideration. Lest I run out of time, I'm going to skip and I suggest you read 1 John 2:15 to 17. It kind of summed up what she really looked to, not realizing the overarching effects that that would have had in her life. Now here in Matthew 10, verse 37, Matthew 10 and verse 37, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. Now, we cover this sort of thing in, you know, counseling about baptism and so forth. It's part of counting the cost. We really need to love God and Jesus Christ more than anything else. And it fits quite well with this consideration of Lot's wife situation. Far more important that we love God and do what he tells us, what he requires of us, and have allegiance to him, than it is to our family's physical well-being if we have to leave them. Now, it's hard to accept, hard to believe, but that's true. We need to have that complete dedication and discipline to follow God when that day comes, and it may come soon, and we'll have to hear that warning, and we'll have to make that decision, and we'll have to flee quickly without hesitation. So it's good to think about this ahead of time. Where do you stand? Where do I stand when we know that we have to flee? Revelation 18:4 says, and we again won't turn there, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sin and receive not of her plagues. Same thing once again that Sodom suffered. So as a comparison with Lot's wife, think of Abram by comparison. Opposite end of the scale. Abram's willingness to sacrifice his long-awaited, long-anticipated, really anxious that it be fulfilled about the promise of having a son and that so much would come through him, Isaac. At first thought, one would say, well, how could a father be willing to sacrifice his old son, his own son, who he waited so long for? Yet the Bible records that he was in the process of actually plunging that knife when God restrained him, provided another way, because God knew his heart was committed to him. And Abraham undoubtedly would have recognized that God had ways of carrying out the promises and the blessings that he'd given through some other way, through Isaac, but some other way than to have killed him. Well, we don't know exactly, but it certainly seems that's the case. How he would have fulfilled it, who knows? Well, that attitude, that understanding, that willingness is what we need to have in us too when we're told to abandon our family and our friends and our possessions and our pets and everything we seem to like and love about the society we live in. So the understanding of that decision of Lot's wife had to make was very well impinging, I think, on all of us. We're told to flee in present comfortable circumstances in which we live and rush to the unknown. It's no doubt going to be a difficult, one of the greatest tests of our spiritual lives. And we'll know that before us lies life, if we follow God, and hope. But behind us lies death and destruction, just as Lot and his family saw occurred to Sodom when they fled. So it seemed a solemn and a fearful thing for anyone to just die quietly in his bed. This is another little side point, I guess, but and suddenly we think people do that, and oh, that's sort of tragedy. We're going to miss so-and-so and so-and-so. And yet here in the very act of sinning, Lot's wife was struck down directly by God. That would seem to be a more telling, meaningful, threatening, awesome thing to experience. So Jesus warned us, remember Lot's wife. No, he didn't say, remember Nadab and Abihu were burned with God's fire when they used the wrong fire. He didn't say, remember Uzzah, who reached out his hand to study the ark, trying to do a good act, but still breaking God's instruction. So those situations are not at all similar to what we face. God didn't say remember them, although they're in the Bible and we can, but he specifically points us again to remember Lot's wife. And I think he gave that illustration to us because we're facing in this particular time the end of this age, not just the end of Sodom, but the end of the whole structure that mankind is suffering with. And so I think the things that we see here directly apply to our situation and our condition. Now, a couple of other scriptures I'll make reference to. In Romans 8, 7, it says, the carnal mind is enmity against God. And that's why we are prone to do that. And in 1 John 2:15, it says, love not the world. And that's what we're talking about again. All of our comfortable things that we're familiar with and love about the world. So the problem here is that she didn't put that aside and love God more. She failed to respond to all those privileges and opportunities and understanding that God was giving her through being married to Lot, who he placed so much faith and trust in. She was too connected and too committed to the world of her time and too much emotional attachment. So this time, our time is especially threatening, and we have an opportunity now in this day and age to put more of our effort, more of our interest, more of our commitment to the word God gave us so that we're faced with the time that God tells us in some fashion, and I don't know how, it's time to get out, to flee, to leave this world, that we don't start thinking then about how emotional we are about this or that or the other thing that we're presently so tied up with and comfortable with. Luke 18, verse 8, Jesus himself asked a pertinent question in the second part of that scripture. He said, when the Son of Man comes, shall he find faith on the earth? Well, faith is what will lead to making these decisions, the proper decisions, well ahead of time, well in advance, so when the time does come, we don't have to start thinking it through then. We know where we stand. So I think we can learn great lessons from reading the Bible with understanding and everything. In a situation with Lot's wife, in response to this heart-stopping instruction of get out of town, and faced with that imminent action that had to be taken, it's not the time to be preparing for a rational decision. I don't think she was. I don't think she really realized it and applied it to her situation, but that's what it results in, as we've tried to cover here today. So that time is now, today, while we have some time to make up our minds and how we will respond to God. So in conclusion, remember Lot's wife.